Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories we are covering in Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, April 25th, 2023. Residents of Khartoum take advantage of the U.S. brokered ceasefire to plan for their lives.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Monday announced that Sudan's warring parties had agreed to a 72-hour ceasefire.
And the former governor of Central Darfur says there is no ceasefire in Darfur region.
Since yesterday, there is a bloody conflict, and it looks more of ethnic conflict between the Arab and non-Arab in El Geneina.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A U.S. brokered three-day ceasefire between Sudan's warring generals seem to be holding despite sporadic clashes after previous truces quickly failed. People in the capital are using the lull in fighting to restock supplies or evacuate, as Michael Atit reports from Khartoum, Sudan.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Monday announced that Sudan's warring parties had agreed to a 72-hour ceasefire. Blinken said the agreement between the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, and the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, began following intense negotiation over the past 48 hours. The United States urges the SAF and the RSF to immediately and fully uphold the ceasefire, Blinken said. He said the U.S. will coordinate with the regional and international partners and Sudanese civilian stakeholders to help create a committee aimed at forging a permanent cessation of hostilities and humanitarian arrangements in Sudan. In a written statement Monday, the RSF said it had agreed to the truce in order to open humanitarian corridors, facilitate the movement of citizens and residents, enable them to fulfill their needs, reach hospitals and safe areas, and evacuate diplomatic missions. We also call on the international community to intervene and put pressure on the Sudanese army to abide by the terms of the ceasefire, the RSF said in a tweet. There was no immediate official statement from the Sudanese army on the U.S. brokered ceasefire. In Khartoum, civilians ventured out to buy food and supplies on Tuesday or packed into vehicles to flee the city, seeking safer places to wait out the clashes which began on April 15th. Evacuation of diplomatic mission from Khartoum continued for a third day. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan said in a statement that some 700 UN and international non-governmental organization staffers and their dependents have reached Port Sudan by road. More than 70 other international aid workers have already been evacuated from El Geneina in West Darfur and Zalinje in Central Darfur to Chad. In response to the security situation in Sudan, the United Nations had temporarily relocated its internationally recruited personnel from Khartoum to Port Sudan. But Volker Perthes, the head of the United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan, or UNITAMS, remains in Khartoum despite the war. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum,
still in Sudan.
Sudan,
the former governor of Central Darfur says the U.S. brokered ceasefire is not holding in some parts of the Darfur region. Adib Yusuf says the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudan Armed Forces are still fighting in El Geneina and some parts of southern Darfur, forcing internally displaced persons to cross into Chad. Adib, who also heads a non-profit known as People to People, says they are working across various Sudanese cities to provide much-needed help to families trapped by the ongoing fighting.
Yeah, the experience is terrible as far as the humanitarian situation is concerned. As far as the security situation is concerned, and the major two issues that people in Khartoum are suffering is issues of protection and issues of survival.
Let's talk about protection. Protection against what? From who?
Protection of civilian. So I'm talking mainly to the civilian population in Khartoum and civil society organization and ordinary people. So there's lack of of protection on the civilian population. So that's what I mean by protection.
And let's talk about your organization, the People to People Peace. What are you doing at this moment where, you know, people are trapped in their houses? Some people are looking for exit strategies and it's not working out. What is your organization doing to help those who really want to look for a solution?
Yeah, in fact, we have been trying to find a solution for the current conflict, but even before, we are trying to prevent this conflict from happening, because everybody in Sudan knows that one day these two groups will end up in a fighting. So we have been trying to mitigate that conflict and to prevent that conflict, but when things fall apart, then we get engaged into other activities, such as helping the injured people, trying to provide some medical staff to the hospitals and clinics, trying to encourage the medical staff also to continue working, and providing food to the injury and all patients at different hospitals. And then also creating awareness about no war, giving peace a chance. This is with the conflicting parties at the local level here. As the situation is increasing violence, like in West Darfur, since yesterday there is a bloody conflict, and it looks more of ethnic conflict between the Arab and non-Arab in El Geneina.
Let's talk about the latest development in El Geneina. You were saying there's been clashes there that has taken some ethnic dimension. What are the casualty figures? I mean,
there's no accurate number about the casualty figures. But there's some injuries, there's some people that were killed in this conflict. And in El Geneina, and precisely, the conflict is not looked like a political conflict. It looked more of an ethnic conflict because of the history, because of the revenge, because of the history of the previous conflict, and then the grievances of different ethnic groups against one ethnic group. Besides the fact that Darfur has experienced this conflict before, and as a result, there is 119 IDP camps. So these IDPs, they don't look at this conflict from political perspective. They look at it from ethnic perspective, and that is a challenge, and that is the irony, and that is a tragedy.
The UN agencies are already sounding an alarm bell, saying that a lot of people from Darfur are crossing into Chad. What do you know about that?
Yeah, the UN agencies and the international organizations, they already left Darfur, and that is adding a new challenge to the people of Darfur. And as if history repeats itself, like what happened in Rwanda, right after the international community evacuated their personnel, then the genocide occurred in Rwanda. So this is what I'm concerned about.
How is the situation in the town where you are? Are you in Geneina or El Fasher?
I'm in Zalingi. The situation in Zalingi, it is like any other city. There is RSF in different parts of the city, and there is local initiative from ordinary people asking them to move out of the city, and the militaries are shooting on them. They took a civilian as a shelter, and that is why many civilians were injured. There is a lot of looting processes in different parts of the city, looting in government offices, UN agencies, the market, and ordinary houses.
Who is responsible for these lootings?
I think the direct responsibility comes from for the rebel support forces. Simply, even if they are not the one who are looting it, the militia that they came with them. So in some areas, it is not the rebel support forces that they loot, but the militia that they came with them.
That's Adib Yusuf, director of the non-profit People to People Peace and the former governor of Central Darfur State. He spoke with me earlier today from Zalinji in Darfur. The UN Refugee Agency is making plans for hundreds of thousands of people spilling over Sudan's borders to escape violence. UNHCR officials today told a Geneva briefing they are poised for 270,000 people to flee over Sudan's borders, a preliminary planning figure that includes those crossing into South Sudan and Chad, as well as South Sudanese returning home. In Chad, Halim Ishaq Omar fled Tandeli in Sudan. She says there is no security in Sudan, so she fled to Chad. She says they came with nothing and need many things to survive. Omar says they will have to rely on UNHCR for help. UNHCR estimates for refugees from Sudan so far only covers two of Sudan's seven neighbors. Projections for Egypt, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Central African Republic, and Libya are not yet ready. Sudan itself hosts more than 1 million refugees, many of whom have fled conflicts in the neighboring countries such as South Sudan, in addition to 3.7 million of its own people are internally displaced, UN data shows. Samvora Habamungu is the head of UNHCR sub-delegation in Chad. He said many of these women crossing to Chad say they need food urgently.
Et puis il y a la nourriture, hein, c'est qu'ils amènent de nourriture, c'est pour se passer.
Habamungu says the people who came from Goita have nothing. They lost everything. Everything was torched on the other side. And the women told us they need food. He also says the need for clean water is very urgent. We must do something because there is a risk of waterborne diseases like dysentery and diarrhea. At the UNHCR meeting in Geneva, officials say the agency is working closely with partners and governments in the region to assess the needs of the refugees and express gratitude that neighboring nations are keeping borders open. UNHCR also is bolstering supplies of key aid items, including sleeping mats, soap, and cooking utensils. Still on Sudan, some Sudanese nationals living in the South Sudan's capital, Juba, have welcomed a decision by leaders of the armed groups to accept a 72-hour brokered ceasefire by the Biden administration Monday. Some of the Sudanese nationals who spoke to VOA in Juba say the temporary ceasefire could help the two sides to resolve their differences amicably. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Sudanese trader Al-Nur Osman Mohammed says the 72-hour temporary ceasefire could ease conditions for thousands of families trapped in the middle of fighting across the country. Osman expresses some reservations over the ceasefire, saying the two sides had reneged previous ceasefire deals reached over the past few days.
There have been like four ceasefire agreements so far. These agreements have made it easier for the evacuation of foreign diplomats, and also more Sudanese civilians found a way to flee to Ethiopia, to South Sudan, and to Chad. It is our hope that this ceasefire agreement will continue and lead to the process of dialogue so that the war will stop.
According to the World Health Organization, at least 400 people have been killed since fighting flared up in Khartoum and other cities on April 15th. Osman says if the ceasefire holds, regional leaders tasked to mediate between the two sides could find avenue for negotiations between General Al-Burhan and General Daglo.
The ceasefire is not the solution. We hope that regional leaders and the African Union and the president of South Sudan, who is very important to the leaders of Sudan, will all get involved so that they encourage these people for talks, because war will never have a solution but dialogue. So we hope that there will be talk and there will be a peace agreement soon, God willing.
Al-Tahir Nur Jalla is another Sudanese trader in Juba. He says most people in Sudan believe the warring parties will dishonor the U.S. brokered ceasefire. Nur says Sudan's infrastructure is damaged by the ongoing fighting.
The destruction that has been done is huge, and if we come to sit down again, we shall find that rebuilding Khartoum will be difficult. Bahan will go, Imeti will go, but who will refer the infrastructures of the country when it is destroyed? So if they are not willing to stop the war, we will call for the intervention of the international community to stop this war and to stop destruction so that the Sudanese people will not suffer.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development has appointed the president of Kenya, Djibouti and South Sudan to travel to Khartoum and help the warring parties to settle their differences through dialogue once the warring parties commit to a ceasefire agreement. President Salva Kiir says once the guns are silent and the Khartoum International Airport is opened, he will lead a delegation of regional bloc IGAD to Khartoum to mediate between the warring parties. Hamza Bala, another Sudanese living in South Sudan, says he hopes the warring parties will silence the guns after agreeing to hold off street battles in Khartoum.
They were supposed to cease fire so that they stop destruction. People are suffering and they are dying anyhow and in big number. Some militias are entering into houses and some civilians are reporting that their property and money is being looted. We have to see that the ceasefire holds so that civilians can also leave from hostile places.
The United Nations says up to 20,000 people have fled the violence in Sudan to seek safety in neighboring countries, and many families lack basic needs such as food, water, and shelter. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are the implications of the conflict in Sudan? Find out more after the break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some military analysts say Sudan's violent power struggle between the paramilitary rapid support forces and the Sudan armed forces looks even and could carry on for months, even years. Over time, experts say Sudanese army is likely to gain the upper hand in the conflict thanks to its aerial advantage and the logistical support it receives from Egypt, but not a decisive victory. However, the RSF will have enough regional help, mostly from the United Arab Emirates, to survive and fight on. Wolfgang, former Australian military attaché in Libya, discussed the prospects of a prolonged conflict in Sudan with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
It is very questionable whether the current ceasefire, which was brokered by the United States and by Saudi Arabia, will lead to a lasting end of the fighting, if the fighting is resumed. The rapid support force does neither have the manpower nor the equipment nor the weapons to defeat the Sudanese army, which has, as you've mentioned, a quite capable air force, including about 70 fighter jets from Russia and from China, and also about 40 Russian attack helicopters. On the other side, Sudan is a huge country, and the Sudanese army is needed in several hotspots, not only to fight the rapid support force. I doubt that they have altogether the capability to decisively defeat the RSF. They were not able to do so with the various much less powerful insurgencies in the last years in Darfur, in southern Kordofan, and in the Blue Nile area, let alone with South Sudan in the years before. So I don't see any compelling reason why they should achieve a decisive victory against the much better trained and funded rapid support force.
Military analysts believe the battle for Sudan's capital, Khartoum, is expected to be long and bloody, but the army could capture the city since it has a larger military arsenal in the city. However, they said the RFS eventually would retreat to its stronghold in western province of Darfur, as well as infiltrate and capture small pockets of land elsewhere in Sudan. Would such a trajectory threaten to fracture the country as well as splinter the very forces fighting each other?
Yes, absolutely. The Sudanese army won't be able to follow the RSF and defeat them in the stronghold in the southern half of Darfur. And even if the army cooperates with the various former Darfur rebel groups, like the Sudan Liberation Movement Army, the SLMA, and the JEM, the Justice and Equality Movement, they would not be able to defeat them. Furthermore, the rapid support force, which recruits mainly from Sudanese Arab tribes, will certainly be able to sustain a guerrilla war in other parts of the country with the support of some fellow tribesmen. They would also probably try to undermine the cohesion of the Sudanese army using the tribal links. One very dangerous military option for them could be to cut off the pipeline from the western oil fields to Khartoum and further on to Port Sudan. So all this could very well lead to a de facto division of the country.
The conflict risks getting more interwoven with regional rivalries and power struggles. So if the conflict tilts against one side, then we should expect that friends would come to aid the losing side. Could a protracted war predicted in Sudan threaten outside intervention?
I would not rule this out, especially if Egypt considers its own vital interests are in danger. This could be, for example, the case if the RSF is somehow able to threaten Egypt's water supply through the Nile River. Ethiopia could use the weakness of the government in Khartoum to seize the disputed Al-Fashaga border triangle in the south, which has seen some border clashes from 2020 to 2022, so pretty just a few years behind. I don't think it is very likely that a foreign nation would intervene to rescue the RSF, the former Janjaweed, although they control important gold mines in southern Darfur. The RSF and the Janjaweed have a very bad reputation because of their war crimes in the Darfur conflict and also because of their more recent violent crackdown on civilian protesters in Khartoum in 2019. On the other side, it is unlikely that they will be able to take over the whole country, so no one needs to come to rescue the central government. And with regard to the Emiratis, regardless of their previous ties, I don't expect them to provide significant military support to the RSF, as this would not only be technically difficult, but also certainly annoy Egypt and probably also some other countries. I would say there is not much to win in providing such a military support to the former Janjaweed.
That's Wolfgang Putzeil, former Austrian military attaché in Libya. He spoke with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. From Khartoum, we go to South Sudan, where some South Sudanese lawmakers are condemning a recent alleged kidnap, defilement, rape and assault on a 13-year-old girl by a member of the South Sudan People's Defense Force. A lawmaker representing Lanya County in central Equatorial State at the National Assembly says soldiers should be protecting civilians. For VOA News, Rose Keji Benjamin reports from Juba.
42-year-old Merikiden says she found her daughter in a critical condition at a hospital in Juba months after she disappeared from home. She says her daughter, whom we shall not name for privacy reasons, was raped and physically assaulted before being allegedly dumped at a health facility in Juba.
It was since January 9th, 2023, when she was kidnapped. Since that time, up to April 9th, 2023, when the doctor called me and informed me that my daughter is very sick in the hospital, and on Easter Sunday, I came and I found my daughter's situation was so difficult. Thank God we ran up and down because she needed blood, and as well, she was taken for operation, and we thank God her operation was successful. And since that day up to now, we are here. at the hospital.
Kiden says the individual who raped her daughter should be punished for his acts. Dr. Repen Lugala-Loban works at the One Life Specialized Medical Center in Munuki Residential Area, where Kiden's daughter is admitted. He confirms that the 13-year-old girl was in a bad shape. He says the suspect, identified as Mabior Ayingor, dropped the girl at the health facility at night. Dr. Luban says the minor sustained severe injuries from the rape and physical assault, leading to bleeding.
This lady was brought up to us here at the night, almost 10 p.m. She was brought in severe pain, unable even to stand to walk. We carried and put on bed, wrote emergency medication to manage.
Joyce Dusman James is a lawmaker representing Lanya County of Central Equatoria State at the National Legislative Assembly. She says she met with the suspect, who admitted that he kidnapped, raped and assaulted the minor.
So when yesterday we went to the police station, we asked him. He said that he beat the girl because he told the girl not to communicate anywhere, not to communicate with anyone, even the mother or who or what. So he started beating the girl because he's talking to the girl, and then the girl is not responding for him properly. He pulled the girl inside, he locked the door, and he tied the girl, and then he started beating the girl.
Jamie says soldiers will be protecting civilians, especially minors, rather than abusing their rights. Moses Evans is another lawmaker representing Lanya County at the National Legislative Assembly and member of the Specialized Committee on Defense and Veteran Affairs. He says he will ensure the victim gets justice.
In this case, we are going to take it serious. That's one of our concerns as a Committee on Defense and Veteran, to make sure that our army to carry their duty as a national and professional and army, and to take their mandate of protecting our civilian instead of harassment, beating them and torturing on that. Also, we'll be proceeding to make sure that there will be the justice made for this small lady.
Brigadier Samuel Well is a police inspector at Munuki Division Headquarters. He identified the suspect as Mabior Ayingor, who is a member of the South Sudan's People's Defense Force. Brigadier Well says the suspect will be tried for kidnap and rape, among other crimes. If convicted, he could be sentenced to 10 years in jail.
The case was reported to us on 12 this month, and the section open to this perpetrator is 273. This section is open against somebody who kidnapped or abducting the girl or a woman with the intention to forcefully marry her or make her sleep with him. This section is open to such a person.
The spokesperson of the South Sudan's People's Defense Force, SSPDF General Lul Raikong, told VOA Friday he is aware of a case involving a member of the SSPDF who kidnapped a minor in Lanya County.
Because along Lanya Road, we have deployed a lot of soldiers along Lanya Road. And now he's going to be tried under two types of laws under the national constitution, which is clearly against a marriage of anybody under the...
A report released by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan in March this year stated a 2% increase in the number of civilians harmed across South Sudan in 2022. For VOA News, I am Roskeji Benjamin in Juba.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. I am your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast in Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Killer William, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kifaya leni nakulu watata beletani na de bishilu ninafulu lakile finastanin